You're listening to the Next Wave Radio Network.
Again for like the third time.
That's all right.
What you don't know is that we've had to try this recording over and over again because every time we hit record, another weather alert comes through.
Bit of an emergency going on out there, everybody. Take shelter.
We're recording this podcast in the middle of like tornado thunderstorm watch 2013.
Yes.
We've had like a couple of tornado watch, and you know what? The thing is, you're going to hear this and you're going to look outside and be like, wow, the weather is beautiful.
That's right.
No matter where you are. If you're in Michigan, you'd be like, what? Tornadoes? We are in Texas and there's a lot of tornadoes and bad weather, especially this time of year. And so we've been dealing with that.
There is actually a chance a week from now someone could be listening to this and the exact same scenario is happening. This happens every year in the month of May and sometimes September.
Uh-huh.
Like every other week, there's a huge cell that moves through and takes up, you know, a football field in Arlington somewhere.
How do we leverage this to make any sense with what it is that we're talking about?
We don't. We just move on.
All right.
We just bury it.
This is the this is our attempt at the Next Wave Radio. For now, it's untitled, the Bad Movie Podcast. We did have an excellent idea for a title. Joel did earlier tonight.
Thank you. It's kind of heartbreaking. I don't know that I can talk about it, but, well, it wasn't that great, to be
honest.
Why not?
You talked about it twice before. We'll just do it again.
It's lost its luster this third time around. No, I was trying to think, okay, you know, people who watch bad movies, like, who are these people? Who gets enjoyment out of watching bad movies? And hopefully, if you're listening to this podcast, you're one of those people. But you almost have to be a bit of a masochist. You want to, cause yourself pain for at least 2 hours, sometimes 90 minutes. And I was like, ooh, masochist. Cinema. You merge those two words together,
as I
oft like to do. A little mashup. Cinemasochist. So I was like, Joe, got a title for the podcast, man. What do you think of it? Mm-hmm. Cinemasochist. He's like, well, I don't
loved
want to speak
it.
For you.
No, you can speak. Go ahead. Speak. You can speak for
he
my text.
He was beside himself.
I loved it. No, I really did.
He
loved it.
He got down on his knees and started performing oral immediately. It was like, Joel, this is the best.
Yeah, through text. I just got on my knees at the movie store that I was at and was just like, excuse me, I need to perform oral on you for this guy on the other side of the phone. No, I loved it. I love Cinemasochist. So I immediately Googled it and saw that it was Taken.
God damn it. All my best ideas thought up by people.
It's always the way, Joel.
Exactly.
We should
track that guy down, though, and see if he'll sell it to us.
Who the hell knows?
I got like 75 cents in my pocket.
All right, so we are going to try to come up with a proper title for this thing. You've probably heard Joel before on the Apic Gladiators. So
I apologize.
Yeah. The original
for my two appearances.
This podcast is originally the brainchild of my friend Bill Chandler, who worked with me when I did The Killing Joke. He was my assistant director, a really good friend of mine, worked a lot with the improv group that I had put together, and unfortunately has come down with some really tragic medical conditions just recently.
Yeah.
And is unable to do this podcast with me. And so basically, in his honor, I carry it on. And with his blessing, I carry it on. And I couldn't think of someone else better to do this podcast with than you. No, seriously.
Thanks. No, yeah.
Because you and I both come from a background of film. You know, you actually still work in the industry. Whereas,
somewhat.
You know, I've got like a maybe somewhat successful podcast in some nerd circles.
Absolutely.
Or a web series, rather, with The Variants. And you know, trying to get something going again with this new web series idea. And so, you know, film is something that I've kind of always dabbled in. But it's your thing. I mean, you just directed me last weekend in a commercial.
It's more TV commercial, though. You're making it sound like, I worked on Armageddon. But you were in Armageddon.
I was. I was in Armageddon. No, but seriously, you know what it is. You know how it is to have to shoot somebody, direct somebody, edit somebody together. You get the basics.
Yes. And I'll tell you what, man. I'm a little conflicted doing this because there are horrible movies out there. Don't get me wrong. They deserve to be lampooned. But at the same time, I respect anybody who like, the movie we're going to talk about today and on every week, hopefully moving forward, they're accomplishments. People got together, you know, time was spent, blood was shed sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's easy for us to sit back on our golden thrones, our couches, and judge these people. But they actually got off their asses and did something. So you got to give them kudos there. However, should they have done what they did?
See, I can't completely agree with you or like feel you on that, where I'm like, yeah, they got out there and they did it, because I mean, man, sometimes movies are just ways that some people launder blood money. You know, they're like, okay, you watch these movies and you're like, there's no reason this thing got made other than the fact that someone was laundering some, like, some heroin, some drug money, something illegal was going on, and this was the front. Like all those Uwe Boll movies.
Oh my God.
I feel like those are all fronts for some kind of illegal operation.
It's got to be. Who continues to. Yeah, no. Yeah. I would actually throw the most recent Spider-Man, the Amazing Spider-Man, into that mix too.
Oh, really?
Well, really, I mean, not in the sense that it was bad, because obviously I had a lot of money to toss at it, but like the only reason that movie was made was because Sony was going to lose the rights.
Lose the rights, yes.
To Spider-Man. So, like, oh, let's crank out another movie, even though we just released Spider-Man 3, what, 18 months ago?
Right.
Arguably, that movie did not need to be made.
No, well, but I'll tell you, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I know.
I liked it. I mean, I know we're not here to talk about The Amazing Spider-Man, but I kind of dug the movie. Yeah, next week. Yeah. All right, but what we are here to talk about is a film that you've probably heard people talk about before. And originally, I had approached Joel and I was like, dude, they made a sequel to this movie. We should totally do it. And then we kind of agreed, well, we can't really talk about the sequel until we've talked about the original one. So we are going to talk about James Nguyen's classic Birdemic Shock and Terror.
Classic. I like a movie that came out 5 years ago and has been seen by 5,000 people. It's classic.
It's
no,
a classic.
Listen, I'm so glad that we're doing this one first instead of Birdemic Part 2, because I was ready to just dive, you know, headfirst into Birdemic 2 and take it. I'm actually excited about Birdemic Part 2 now,
right.
Having just, like, literally before we started recording, I finished watching the original Birdemic like 90 minutes ago.
Uh-huh.
I love it. No, this is exactly, guys, listen, this is exactly what a bad movie should be. It should be so horrible that it's great, and spoiler alert, I don't want to jump to the end of the story, but I am going to recommend that you get it's streaming on Netflix.
Yeah,
get on Netflix, add it to your queue. The next time you're stoned or drunk.
Oh, it's on the Netflix queue?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh great.
That's how I watched it.
I bought it for no reason.
Well, you were one of the early adopters.
I was one of the early adopters. Honestly, I had a buddy of mine who was like, "Dude, this movie's so bad, you've got to see it."
Yes.
I was like, "What? Really?" And I'm one of those. I'm a cinemasochist, I guess, if we're going to keep coining the term.
Let's do it. Fuck that guy.
Yeah. Right. So I enjoy, like, if there's a bad movie, but like there's some enjoyment to be had to watching it. All right, I'll give it a shot. I'm also one of those guys that, like, the live-action He-Man movie with Dolph Lundgren is one of my favorite movies.
That's
like,
a part of my childhood, man.
I love it. And even to this day, I go, wow, Frank Langella as Skeletor is still a really good villain. It's, like, one of cinema's best villains. I hold to that. You're looking at me like I'm nuts, but
no.
I really believe that. So, no, I enjoyed... I don't know how to say this. This movie is horrible.
Yes, it's awful.
It really is bad. And I relish in the fact that I have seen it and experienced it, but I don't know if I agree that it's so bad, it's good.
Oh,
like,
really?
I love it. I'm kind of afraid to see the second one, but before we get too far ahead of ourselves, let's just kind of run through Birdemic.
Here we go.
Okay, can you please tell me, what is the story of Birdemic? Like, what is the plot? What is the A plot that we're dealing with here?
Joe, I just watched it 90 minutes ago, and no, I cannot tell you what this movie is about. It's like Captain Planet meets your 8th grade high school.
Meets Hitchcock.
Yeah, a little bit. Well, except
8th grade high school play directed by Alfred Hitchcock's, like, retarded nephew.
Yes. Although, here's one of the problems with calling this Birdemic. Actually, we should refer to it by its proper title, which is Birdemic Shock and Terror.
Okay.
First of all, this is the first movie. Like, there was no planned sequel. There's no need to have subtitles at this point. This isn't fucking G.I. Joe. Or,
right.
Was Transformers, the first Transformers movie have a...
No, first Transformers, just Transformers.
The second one. All right.
But G.I. Joe, the first G.I. Joe was G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra.
Man, you got to have a lot of balls if you're assuming that you're in the middle of making this movie and you're titling it. And hey, everybody, Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl, what? We know there's going to be a three-picture deal.
Joel,
here.
There
we
was Leonard Part 6.
All right, touche. You got me there. That's a good point. And what a fine film that turned out to be. That'll be next week's episode, everybody.
Right.
Turn in for Leonard Part 6.
You've already, like, determined, like, three movies are going to be next
week's
episode.
Bill Cosby's magnum opus.
Oh, my God.
No, the plot of this movie, well, first of all, the fact that it's called Birdemic, mm-hmm. I was timing it. The movie's 93 minutes.
It's
an hour and 33 minutes.
Let's look on the back of the DVD box.
I'm almost
it's
positive.
90 minutes long.
All right, so give or take for credits. I was going to say there's a blooper reel at the end, but the entire movie is a blooper reel.
A blooper reel.
There's nothing left on the cutting room floor to add to the bloopers.
In the special features, there are two scenes that were cut out.
Oh, my God. Yeah. We need to watch them immediately.
Yeah.
We'll be right back. No, okay, so it's called Birdemic. I timed it. You don't see a bird in this movie until minute 22 and a half. 22 and a half minutes, you finally see, and they're not even real birds at that point. They're fake CG birds.
Okay, wait, is that when they go on their date?
This is the horrible scene.
Or is it when they're on the beach?
I hope you're using finger quotes. No, yeah, they're going on their date, and what's hilarious about it is...
Okay, and they see the little...
Yes,
okay.
They're walking along a sidewalk. There's CG birds that have been added. Whoever the visual effects genius who did this, kudos to you. But what's hilarious about it is they're walking along, and they're looking up at the birds. They're walking faster than the CG birds are flying, which defies all physics and gravity. Yeah. So I'm not quite sure how that happens. But again, shout out to the FX guru, which I'm guessing has to have been the director, right?
I don't know. I'm assuming from the quality of work, it was the same people who did the Paula Abdul Opposites Attract video.
MC Scat Cat.
It was really horrible. It was horrible composition.
Well, what it seems like this whole movie was either like a proof of... what do they call it? Proof of concept piece or like somebody's visual effects demo reel. Like they did it for a class. It could have been 5 minutes long and they made a feature length film out of it.
Kind of like what Raimi did when he tried to make the original Evil Dead. Like he made a spec film first and then got the investors and then that's how he got the money to actually do the movie.
Exactly.
Okay.
Which, not to jump ahead, but looking at the trailer for Birdemic 2, Birdemic 2 looks like the Evil Dead 2 to this movie's Evil Dead. Like a totally remake, same characters, but I digress. Let's back up.
Okay.
Okay.
Right.
So, I wish I could tell you the names of the characters. But
okay, I know the guy's name is Rod.
Rod.
Yeah, the dude's name
Highly
is Rod.
Highly appropriate.
So, Rod. We open up with Rod.
Yes.
I'm going to follow this through line for
Let's
a second.
Do it.
Because I feel like since we open up with Rod, then Rod is our protagonist, yeah?
You would think so, except there's nothing likable about that character. He is charisma-free.
I'm convinced he's not human, that... He walks like a robot.
Yes.
He does the thing where he's the slowest walker, slowest driver. He does everything slow, but and he kind of looks a little downy.
Yeah.
But when he walks around straight from the opening shot, like he walks like the Terminator.
He's a Terminator.
He turns his head before he turns his body. it's the most, like, he walks with no direction at all. Like he's just kind of lost in the world and he's just experiencing life for the very first time. Like he just arrived from the future 2 seconds before the camera opened up on him driving the car.
That's right. He had time to put on clothes before camera started rolling. And not since Boogie Nights has there been a more honest portrayal captured on film. I mean, you know, Mark Wahlberg is just so, hey guys, here I am. Like, I feel like watching this movie was like watching Boogie Nights where it's like, is he in on the joke? Does he realize this is a... There's cameras on him right now. Like he's...
You were not a big fan of Boogie Nights, huh?
You know, I love Boogie Nights. Oh, and I'm so pissed today that I missed out on that poster. There was a limited edition. I'll have to show it to you later.
Yeah.
I digress. Go to MondoTees.com, everybody.
All right.
Plugging other websites.
I don't know why I got on that Boogie Nights tangent, I guess. I'm like, wait, you didn't like that movie?
No, so, Boogie Nights is great, but I'm just saying his... Mark Wahlberg's honesty and really believing everything that he says... It's the same way with Rod, did you say his name is?
Yeah, that's his name in this movie.
Yeah, don't bother looking this actor up on IMDb. You're not going to see him in a lot of stuff.
His name is Alan Bogh, B-A-G-H.
Yeah, yeah, commit that to memory.
B-A-G-H. Suddenly I'm speaking English like he does. B-A-G-H. But apparently I looked up on Wikipedia at one point after I watched this movie, and he had like a credit in The Hobbit.
What?
It's not there anymore. But I think for some reason, people were trying to get him a credit for The Hobbit.
That's Wikipedia for
you. Yeah, that's
funny. What's his name?
His name is Alan Bogh. B-A-G-H.
And the Oscar goes to Alan Bogh, are words you will never hear.
Right.
So, just so you know.
So he comes to this town, and I have no idea, I guess, well, through the course of the film, you do kind of find out, I guess, that he's lived there for a while. He's been working there.
Sure.
And
he's got
just
a successful business selling
Well, he doesn't
something?
Have the business yet. No,
oh,
he works for a software company.
Yeah.
A software startup, but he's living in a huge, beautiful house.
This is what I love. This is the trope of all like independent, cheaply made movies that it's just like you gather your friends together. They all have the same thing. There's always like a car that somebody borrowed from their friend, and it's the nicest car that they know.
Yeah.
In this movie, it's played by a Ford Mustang.
Ford Mustang, which
seriously
in the script they say is a plug-in hybrid.
No bigger gas guzzler with six cylinders on the road than a Ford Mustang. And yeah, that's, yeah. By the way, this movie's got some underpinnings of a not underpinnings.
It's like it's sitting right there on the front of its
fucking
chest.
Surface. Yeah.
Yeah. If this movie was Superman, it would be the big S.
It is like a Captain Planet after school special.
Yeah.
Like it's incredible.
I mean, at one point, we're getting ahead of ourselves. At one point, the characters go on like a double date. And they come. They're like, "Man, that was a good movie." And he's like, "Yeah, An Inconvenient Truth." I'm like, "What? You took dates to that movie? Are you kidding me?"
First of all, timely reference in 2013.
How about the font they were using for the title credits?
It's the font that came with your Mac that anybody can make, and I love how even at the end of it. You know, they're showing the director's names. At one point, the font is stretched. And I'm a bit of a snob when it comes to things like that. I'm the guy who gave a hissy fit over Avatar because they were using Papyrus.
Yeah.
Really? James Cameron? Papyrus? Your fucking font?
I liked, just to delve a little bit deeper into Avatar's less than creative background, the Unobtainium. I know it has nothing to do with the font, but just every time I think of Avatar, I have to go back to Unobtainium.
It seems like...
And it was like a placeholder.
Yes.
Where they were like, okay, we'll come up with some kind of cool term later, but right
for now,
let's just go with Unobtainium. And then they forgot to change it.
Yeah, right, yeah.
No, that font, though, the title font, the title credits seem to go on for 20 minutes.
Yes.
I think it's 4 minutes, though. And there's a score that someone composed for this movie.
Well,
it's only like 30 seconds of music.
Yeah.
And it repeats itself over that 4 minutes.
And you know, I'm okay with looping music. Listen, I do videos. Sometimes you have to take a 90-second song and you got to stretch it out to 2 minutes. If it, you know, that's fine. I understand. But at least make it continuously loop. The song starts for 30 seconds, stops, dead silence, or at least the gnat sound of the car driving along the road, and then starts up again. I feel like I'm watching Lord of the Rings. Like it's a false ending over and over again. And I'm 10 minutes into this movie. You're watching this Ford Mustang drive down in real time, mind you.
And is the camera like just set on the dash,
or there's a little bit of dash cam there?
You think James Nguyen is like just kind of hunched down in the passenger seat?
I have a feeling there's better footage of that meteor that struck in Russia from like the dash cam of all the cabs that were driving around. This is all exposed improperly. Okay, so yes, the entire movie, it really sets the tone because it's shot horribly, it's acted horribly, it's in widescreen at least, you know, which is. Infuriating? I just invented a word.
You could also get this movie on Blu-ray. So
you're kidding. It's in high def.
It's high def. There is a high def version of it.
Wow. All right. I don't even know what to say to that. That's when I think back to my childhood and trying to find, you know, I had like a Super 8 camera. It didn't even record sound. It was 4x3 and you had 12 minutes. No, it was 8 minutes. Those reels were 8 minutes. You better make your movie in 8 minutes. These kids with their high def cameras and their Final Cut Pros.
Their phones. Spoiled. People are filming movies on iPhones now.
Yes, I know.
It's ridiculous. But, you know, you've got the font, I don't know if you caught this when they were going through the credits, supporting cast. It was supporting casts.
No.
Yeah. They pluralized it.
Here's an overarching theme from this movie. I'm pretty sure that the guy that wrote the script, English isn't his first language.
No.
James, just going on
James
a limb
Nguyen.
There.
No, I believe it is not. He is Vietnamese.
Yeah, I realized that about halfway through the movie when we automatically cut to a scene in a Vietnamese restaurant.
Don't you mean Vietnamese?
Vietnamese, exactly, as it's pronounced by Rod.
Is that the proper pronunciation?
I have no idea. Well, listen, they're in San Francisco, so they would know better than I do.
Is that where this movie takes place?
I did Google where, what's the name of the town?
Moonlight Bay? God, I don't remember.
Like that.
God,
something
is
with
it on
moon
the back
and
of
bay
this?
In it. But yeah, it's
see.
Right outside of San Francisco in the Bay Area.
Damn.
Yeah, which brings me back to my point where everything, like, first of all the adults in this movie, actually, I take that back. They actually had some real adults in here, but most of the people are, like, aged between, well, it looks like 21 and 25 because they're all the friends of, you know, the director.
Yeah.
Totally, the hot chick who stars in it, all right, admittedly cute. What's her name? Whitney Moore.
Yeah.
I get the feeling that this guy wrote this movie so that he could cast this chick in his movie.
Do you think
so that
he
she
knew
would
her
get
ahead
half
of time?
Megan. Oh, absolutely. Every short film that I ever made was like, I know this chick, she's pretty cute. How do we get her naked in my bedroom?
Oh,
well, I can't
God.
Do the traditional way, so
okay.
Let me shoot a faux film.
I'm
and,
never doing a film with you anymore.
Cast her in it, yeah. It always backfires when they back out, and then you have to pull forward with your number two choice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, number two out there. But yes, so
I feel so dirty right now.
Oh, just wait till we get later in that scene, that creepy slash sexy scene.
Okay, yeah. Because there's a couple of those.
But so yeah, but you brought up the point. The guy lives in what appears to be like a 2-car garage, 3,000 square foot house, yeah, and he's like a bachelor in his 20s.
He's a bachelor who's got like a 50-inch widescreen TV in his kitchen.
Yeah.
He apparently only eats in his kitchen. He's standing like 2 feet from his TV, yep. But he takes the remote and points it at the television to turn it off. We follow him on his complete drive to work.
Literally, like real time.
We stop with him as he gets gas. We're completely glossing over when he meets up with Natalie. That's Whitney Moore's character, Natalie.
Yes.
When he goes to this, the movie opens up. God, we're horrible at this. So the movie opens up and he stops into this diner and like is greeted by this waitress who I can't tell if she's French or like Down syndrome-y. I can't tell because first of all, the sound on this,
oh my God,
is horrible. Like it just cuts out, cuts in. It feels like there was no boom operator at all.
No.
Like they caught everything on the shotgun mic.
Everything's coming from the Nat sound of the camera. And even if you're on a wide shot and you're 20 feet away, well then that's the audio you're going to get.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. So you get this weird sound where she's like, ah! And it doesn't match any of, they didn't get any room tone or anything.
No, it's
just the ugliest, most abrasive thing in the world to listen to. And then at one point she's like, I'll be right back with you. And I'm like, okay, are you Downey or are you French? So then he like eyes Whitney Moore. He eyes Natalie.
Yes.
Sitting at another table and Natalie's eating and stuff.
Attractive.
Yeah.
Blonde.
Very attractive girl. And he just stares at her. Eventually over time, she finishes her meal and he never orders anything to eat.
He gets up and walks out of the restaurant. That's not shady at all.
She gets up and walks out. She doesn't pay a check.
Oh, I didn't even catch that.
I didn't see a check on her table. And he doesn't pay anything, but they hold on the shot. And they do this throughout the whole movie.
Yes, here's
where
the problem.
They hold on shots way too long.
You can practically hear the director yelling, cut. And like that's the shot that they left in. Everything lingers for about 25% longer than it really needs to. And yes, creates awkwardness all around.
Mm-hmm. So this dude stops Natalie creepily. He runs out of the restaurant
and
then turns and finds which way she went, kind of jolts in her direction, and then walks.
And then walks. And then, like, touches her on the small of the back. Hey, listen, pervs out there. The worst possible way to get a hot blonde's attention is to you're going to get maced if you ever try that in real life.
Oh, yes.
Unless you look like Rod.
Unless you look like Joel.
Oh, please.
Dude, he's a good-looking guy.
Stop it.
We'll have some pictures on the website.
My number's 469.
So like, he asks her, he's like, hey, can I ask you a question? Did you go to, like, whatever high school? And she's like, yeah. He's like, yeah, I thought I recognized you. I went to high school with you. Really? Then he's like, so are you from here? You went to high school with this chick. Why are you asking? Like, don't you know where she's from?
Listen,
like,
there are plot holes all throughout this piece of ass.
Mm-hmm. So they hold on these shots even when they're having their conversation. Like there's no natural flow to what's going on in the dialogue. There's no natural cut to coverage.
Yes.
Hey, let's cut to this coverage here. Let's cut to them. It's nothing flows. There's no sense. And I think he edited this himself. If I can find.
Well, that's shocking, isn't it?
And terrifying.
Thanks for picking up on that.
No, Kim Chow was the editor.
Oh, okay, his cousin. There we go. No, but don't you get the impression that, like, everybody's family...
It's racist.
It's not racist. They go to a Vietnamese restaurant, Vietnamese, however they pronounce it. Later on, I'm sorry, but every time I see an Asian in this movie, I'm like, oh, he must be related to the director.
He must be part of the crew.
Even as I'm saying this, this sounds racist.
I feel like there was no crew for this movie. Like,
can't afford it.
The actors and, like, James Duane with a camera.
You know what? Here's a good question. Was there a budget to this movie? Like, was money spent? I know at some point you got to give your buddy $20 to borrow his minivan so that you can shoot for the day. But people spent a lot of time. Like, this must have been a couple of weeks to shoot. There's a lot of different locations and setups and costume changes. I mean, you know, again, for it being a pretty shitty movie, people went through some effort for this.
For those modeling scenes where she has her
they
big...
They blew all the budget there.
Her big modeling audition.
You know what?
At a one-hour photo place.
You know what? I'm so glad you picked up on that because I noticed that. We see this, you know, she's in like 5 different costumes. Oh, she's a professional model. And then they cut to the exterior. She's talking on the phone and you see in the window next to her it says, we do passport ID photos. was like, wow, classy joint.
Yeah.
Is there a casting couch in there too?
She tells him, she's like, well, I've got a modeling audition. He's like, oh, okay, well, I'll see you later. And immediately she goes to this 1 hour photo place and is doing modeling shots in like, you know, geisha dresses and stuff.
Yeah.
And then she leaves. And as she's leaving, her phone starts ringing. And it's like her agent from Dream Models, which sounds horrible.
Again.
Right.
It's next to the nail salon place.
Her agent is like, Victoria's Secret wants you to be their cover model. Congratulations.
Because that's how it works.
This is your chance to really impress them. I'm like, well, wait. If you're going to be on the cover of Victoria's Secret, you've already impressed them.
It's not audition time. That's right.
Everything seems to go really well for everybody at once in this movie.
That's true. You know, yes. She
gets her big deal at Victoria's Secret. He gets his millions, which we can go into in a second. The budget, by the way, on this movie, $10,000.
You're shitting me. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. All right, everybody, if you're listening to my voice, please go to betweennotes.com. I have some buddies who shot a local film here in 2011. Their budget was $10,000. It looks like fucking Citizen Kane next to this piece of shit. It's fantastic. That's what can be done with $10,000.
Your friends now owe us money for advertising.
When you squander, no one's going to hear this.
All right. So what we were talking about before, that he's a software engineer.
Yes.
Or sales.
I guess.
He's like software salesman for some startup company.
Yes.
We open up with him at work. And he's on the phone. He's like, so what can I do to get this deal? What can I do to close this deal? And he's like, Like that TV acting thing where you're not.
Yep.
No one on the phone ever actually talks like that.
Who can talk that fast between the pauses, between the millisecond pauses you're leaving?
I'll tell you who can't talk that fast. Alan Bogg, whatever his name is. He can't talk that fast.
Cybertron? You mean? Yeah.
So he offers, he's like, okay, I'll give you that plus a 50% discount. Can we close the deal? Great. All right. Well, can I make the order right now? Wonderful. Great doing business with you. He hangs up the phone and he goes, woohoo!
That's pretty much it.
And
like
his
Mario.
Buddy comes over. He's like, so what happened? Just closed. I just caught the fish, man.
Biggest sale of my life.
$1 million. He gave that person half off.
Yeah.
It
could have been $2
million off of a bill.
Yes.
There's no way.
You're fired.
Yes, exactly.
You're not the number one salesman, and your company does not sell for $1 billion when you're making horrible negotiations that way.
This is the worst bit of negotiation ever. I've taken $1 million off of this. And later on, when they end up selling the company, in fact, we've got a clip of them
selling it.
You want to hear that?
Well, this is a great scene in itself.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have some great news. Our board of directors has agreed to the acquisition of NCT Software by Oracle Corporation.
Everyone's sitting around
$1 billion.
Everyone cheers in delight.
A million.
And just the awkward cuts.
Yep. There's about a dozen people in this room.
It dies out. The tape dies out. The clapping dies out. But then they cut to another shot.
You guys have worked hard. You've all earned your stock option. Congratulations.
You.
You can hear the edits. And then there we go.
It's still the same. It's the same shot.
The mistake he makes. Oh, there we go. There's one more.
It's so ugly. It's so hard to watch.
I know. And it's like the close-ups aren't close enough to cut from one to one. You're seeing the people in the same frame as they cut. Clearly, this guy's never heard of the 180 rule.
Well, don't ever cross the line. And
that's
also,
right.
He'd never heard of just like, let's get some audio. Let's just, everybody, let's just run the, we're going to run the mic right now. We're going to get some room audio, some room tone. Let's just get some audio of everybody clapping and cheering. And then we could just mix it over the video. There was none of that. Like you just said earlier, it's like all the audio they got came right from the camera. And that's all they worked with.
I also don't feel like there's a lot of second or third takes going on. I feel like there's a lot of guerrilla filmmaking where they probably didn't have permission to shoot where they wanted to shoot.
Yeah.
Except for the Vietnamese restaurant. And so it's just like action.
In the bar where they the hanging out with my family band.
Oh, let's get to that. Let's do this.
Do you
because
get to
this
that?
Is what I consider the climax of the movie. I know you'd think that, you know, the birds attacking is really, you know, the piece de resistance. But in my opinion, it's the giant musical number.
There's
about 45 minutes.
There are a couple things I'd like to get into before we get into that.
Okay,
and just really
we're going to take this chronologically?
Just really quick. He calls up after he makes his big deal and she gets her deal with Victoria's Secret.
Right.
Rod ends up getting in his car and he calls up Natalie to go out to ask her out on a date. And it's the most awkward phone call in the world.
Yeah. Well, let me just say this about the writing in general. I almost feel like George Lucas wrote this. Like, it's clearly written by somebody who's never kissed a girl, never been in love.
Mm-hmm.
Again, English, probably, maybe even third language, not even first. And so, yeah, it's pretty rough.
This is also another place where the edits, they work very hard against the film as a whole, where you're holding too long. But the thing is, when it's on a phone call, it's like that feeling you get like when you've been on a phone call with somebody that you don't really want to talk to.
That's right.
And so like you're kind of given short answers and then there's pauses when that person on the other end of the line realizes, oh, you're done talking.
Yeah.
And then like kind of pick up. That's how this feels watching this. So like he's like, hey. Hey, who's this?
It's Whitney.
It's Rod.
Yeah.
And it's like it goes on.
Yeah.
And he's like, so
pacing.
So how was your day? It was pretty good. I got this deal with Victoria's Secret.
Well, congratulations.
That's great. Congratulations. I think you look great in those lingerie.
Yes. That is literally a line from this scene. I think you look great in those lingerie.
Somehow this dude manages to get this woman to go out on a date with him.
Yes, this never happens.
And they do go to the Vietnamese restaurant that he never tells her where it is, but somehow they meet up at the same place.
That's right. Although, can I take this opportunity to point out the highest production value at all comes, it looks like it's about 20, is that about 20 minutes? Yeah, 18 minutes and 20 seconds into this, the Vietnamese restaurant. There's a jib shot. Somehow there's a jerry-rigged jib shot. I'm sure it's somebody like on the back of a cherry picker that they're just lowering into the frame.
Uh-huh.
But it was almost like P.T. Anderson was moonlighting just for this one scene. I'm like, look at this production value. They're dollying in.
He was like, sure, James, I'll take care of this.
Exactly. I got this one. You sit it up.
Me and Schwartzman got this. Don't worry about it.
Every now and then, though, there's a little bit of, all right, this one is framed, not bad, and that scene was okay, but it's... those are few and far between.
So tell me about the relationship between Rod and his buddy at work. Because, like, after he goes out with Natalie, they have this, like, really horrible dude bonding scene.
Yes, they're playing some little pickup basketball out there. So it's just two dudes on a court, you know, middle of California, just having at each other. One guy is kind of playing keep away for what seems like an abnormally long amount of time.
Yes.
And at what point does it become foreplay? Like, this is no longer, like, they're just going to turn around and kiss at a certain point. It doesn't make it any better that his friend is constantly just, like, pumping with his hand. Like, he keeps talking about sex.
His dude has always got his junk up against him.
Yep,
like,
yep.
Always rubbing his junk up against something.
Even in the scene with the clip that we played where they're talking about the $1 billion, he proceeds to, like, hump his chair afterwards. Like, that's his solid. He's more animal than man.
Do you think that, like, at some point that James Nguyen told this guy, like, hey, look, your character is going to be, like, the comedy relief, the sidekick in this movie? And then, like, do you think, like, there was a falling out, and then that's why we never saw the guy again after they saw An Inconvenient Truth?
I like to think that there are more subtle undertones here. Like he really took him aside and said, all right, here's the subcontext here. You're struggling with your sexuality. You've been attracted to your best friend forever, and you have no other way of expressing it. And every now and then, things get a little out of hand. You get overstimulated, and you just have to, like, pump your elbows and your hips
and
towards
some,
him.
And do some sensual work.
Yeah. So play with that, you know, just kind of let it happen. Just let the scene breathe.
Oh, my God. And and I guess it did, man. They let the scenes breathe too much.
Yes.
Just a little too much time. At first, when you're first watching this movie, and I know I'm going to harp on this all the time, you know, with the long cuts and holding too long, it makes the movie feel like it's trying to be too thoughtful.
Yes.
That you start to lose sight of, what is it? Am I supposed to be watching a horror movie? Am I watching a movie that's supposed to be giving me some kind of political statement? What is going on? And it doesn't help when suddenly the camera opens up on, like, this, the most awkward bikini sex scene.
Thank you, yes.
So, like, this not quite, but sort of instrumental version of Imagine.
Oh my God! Yes, that gets replayed again at the end. Yeah, there's some. There's definitely some subcontext here that, yeah. that Nguyen was trying to work in.
And there's like a poster in the background that says ImaginePeace.com.
And then the chick later, spoiler alert, who dies at the end, is that his best friend's girlfriend.
His best friend's girlfriend,
who is probably the director's sister. Just going out there. Yeah. Although she shows up in a bikini halfway through the movie, so I don't know. If that's his sister, in which case, creepy, because you've just now asked your sister to make out on a bed.
Just sexualized your
Or sibling. Maybe it was his girlfriend, in which case, even creepier, you're having your girlfriend make out with another dude. I don't know.
That's kind of indicative of both sex scenes in this movie.
They bikinis. Should be, yes.
They're
yes.
both in, like, they're in bikinis. Like, yeah. there's no, why aren't they wearing, why aren't, and I mean.
Actually, I think Whitney Moore is wearing, like, bra and panties.
Is she? I thought there was a bikini that she was wearing. Wait, you know what? Maybe you're right.
I think it's bra. It's fresh in my mind. Just saw it 90 minutes ago.
She did
ago,
look good.
So.
Even
she
Rod.
She looks great. I mean, like, yeah. And
Rod's dialogue when he sees her. You look fine. I was like, that is the most unreal. And why did he take her to a hotel?
Yes, I know.
He's got a house. She lives in a florist. Apparently.
Yes.
Where does she live?
I have no idea. With her mother?
Live with her mom.
Because she went to go visit her, yeah.
Who was the most sincere and sweet actress in this movie?
Second best actress in this movie is the mother. I think it's about 25 minutes. When finally in this movie, 25 minutes, a real adult shows up.
Yes.
Somebody who is over the age of 21. And she's great. She's like, you know, projecting, and she almost seems like maybe she's had some theater presence?
A little bit. Yeah, no, a little bit. And unfortunately, a lot of the take, this one take that they use of her is obviously the only take they wanted to do because she kind of flubs her line, but she recovers. But you can tell, like, even not being an actor, like, you go, ooh, yeah, she was flubbing it and she just recovered it.
She recovered. All right.
But she's very sweet, very sincere.
Yes, endearing.
A little bit more theater actor-y than she is a screen actor.
Definitely playing to the back row.
Exactly, yeah. But she's doing okay. The thing that kills me about that scene is when Natalie comes in, she's like, hey, Mom, what are you doing? And Mom's like, I'm fixing some lunch. Do you want anything? But she's got, like, 8 different huge platters of food. And it doesn't help that her mom's, this woman who plays her mom is a big woman.
She is a big woman.
But she's got like all these things of food and she's making like 7 plates up at the same time.
Listen,
and
she's got an appetite.
She's the only person there when Natalie gets there.
She's going through the change. A lot of times you don't know what you want to eat at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturday. You got to mix everything, you know? I actually am glad that she didn't die, and it appears that she may actually be in the sequel.
Yeah,
am I correct in that, or did I zone out?
I think you may have zoned out.
Oh, did she die later?
No. I don't think she died, but I don't know if she's in the sequel.
Oh, I thought I saw her in the trailer.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Why? See, it's beyond.
They brought
me.
Back everybody.
You know what? I think the only reason you would possibly come back for this movie is because of. Like, just the cult status?
Oh, I'm in, dude. It looks fantastic.
Yeah?
Well, here's the thing, and this is a larger question. Do you think, were they in on the joke? Was the director...
The first time?
Yeah.
No.
Let's just talk about Birdemic. Now, you think he sought out to seriously make this independent film?
I think this guy was trying to make a... He was trying to make a point. You know, watching this movie, you see something... He missed the mark completely.
Oh,
it's a mess.
Absolutely.
This movie is a huge mess.
Mission not
but
accomplished.
He was trying to make a statement about what we are doing to our environment and, you know, how it's going to affect us. So he was trying to go with, he probably got some of that funding, some of that $10,000 by telling investors I'm making a horror movie. So that's where the Birdemic thing came from.
Yeah.
But he was trying to make a statement with it. But then at the same time, he was trying to be like, hey, I'm a filmmaker. I'm trying to get, you know, trying to pick up chicks.
Sadly,
so that's where the Whitney Moore thing comes through.
I do get that impression, sadly. But like, it's not.
There was no reason for her to have a sex scene in this movie.
No.
There was
no
reason to have any sex scenes in this movie.
No.
Even when they're not actually, like, no one actually had sex.
No.
It was just awkward grinding around.
And they're like making out and they're really kissing.
And it was really
otherwise,
disgusting.
Otherwise, it should be, yeah. If I just showed you that clip. With no preamble, not the first 25 minutes of the movie. So you had no idea how horrible these guys were, what this movie was even about. If it just said, hey, here's some attractive people. One of them's half naked and they're about to make out on a bed. Maybe not so bad.
I'd be like, what is this, a buddy of yours? Did he give you like some video of him making out?
I shot
out
this with my GoPro. No, but the fact that it's so awkward and it's It's just creepy at that point. Mm-hmm. It feels voyeuristic, and I feel dirty, and I couldn't wait for the birds to come and eat them.
Yeah, well, and the birds did take their damn time.
Yeah, it's 22 minutes and 30 seconds into the movie.
Well, before
we see a bird.
Before we get to the bird attack.
Hold on. Don't you think by accident you would have maybe shot a bird? Like, there's a lot of outdoor scenes in here.
Could
have inadvertently seen a bird in the sky.
No, no, no. There's a couple of birds. You see a couple of birds.
But not before the 22 and a half
minute
mark.
There's a stuffed bird at the Vietnamese restaurant.
And that's a minute 25. I'm saying for the first 22 minutes, there's not even an accident where a bird made it into frame. No. That seems impossible.
I'm just telling you, though, Vietnamese restaurant,
yes,
when they're sitting at the table, there's a stuffed bird over their table.
That's what we call foreshadowing in the film industry.
That pretty soon the humans were going to be the food.
That's right.
Yes.
Because of all that damn global warming that we caused.
So when they make the deal to sell the company, when Rod's company gets sold for $1 billion,
yeah,
his boss asks him, so what are you going to do? And Rod tells him, he goes, well, I've made all those big deals, and it made me think back to the deal that he made earlier.
Yeah.
He's like, I've made all those big deals for you guys. I think I'm going to rest on my nest egg or whatever. He made $1 million deal.
Admittedly,
like
the biggest deal of his life.
And it was the biggest deal of his life.
He's 22 years old, so he's going to hang up that salesman cap and call it a life.
Which is probably not a bad idea. There's just so many inconsistencies to this movie.
No,
you know,
absolutely.
He decides to, after he gets his nest egg, he decides to start his own solar panel company.
Yes.
After buying a solar panel system, he buys a solar panel system for $19,000. The guy tries to sell it to him for $20,000, and he's like, so you give me $1,000 off? All right, let's set it up. So then he goes in and like researches his own solar power company and starts his own company and starts to sell units for like $500 a piece.
Yes.
While still under contract with this $19,000 solar panel company.
Surely there's a non-compete clause you would have had to have signed.
But I'm non-compete, or do you really want to put your money in the business with this guy who he's spending money on a more expensive system? He isn't even using his own system.
That's true. It seems like a failed market already.
It's dumb script writing.
Yeah.
They tried so hard to make him so likable that, yes, I'll deal with you. I'm going to do this. We have a happy ending. Every scene has a happy ending between characters. No, there's never a time where this character seems like a bad guy because we really want you to like him. It's bad playwriting.
Yes.
And so then you get to the point where he starts his own company, and if you're even a little bit intelligent, you're like, oh, well, wait a minute. This guy's a fucking idiot. Because he's paying $19,000 for the system, but he's trying to make one for $500. What the fuck are you doing, man?
Joe, I think you've thought way more about the intricacies of this plot than... They can't even get good sound for this film.
No, they can't even get good sound.
You're talking about the script writing.
The scene where Rod and Natalie are on the beach. They're walking on the beach.
There's waves crashing around them. She's yelling at him. The camera's to the side. The hair's in her face. You can't hear anything. Although, I'm going to go back to some script inconsistencies.
Please, go ahead. Please.
There's one near the end. Okay, so the shit has hit the fan. The eagles have descended. They're tearing apart the city. Although, you can still pull into any gas station. No, we'll get to that one. They pull into a gas station. And, again, got to be a relative of the director, right? The guy behind the counter working the station. Yeah. So they're saying, hey, because of these eagles that have killed everybody, I'm doing him justice. You can barely understand this guy. He needs subtitles. Thing. Price of gas, $100 a gallon. And, of course, our hero, Rod, is like, what the fuck? $100? I'm not going to pay that. He's like, hey, if you want any gas, it's going to be $100 a gallon. So he reluctantly hands him his credit card. Right, and he swipes it. Immediately cut right afterwards to Whitney. And by at this point in the movie, they've procured two precocious children. For some reason.
Yes.
Because you got to have kids.
Because it's like Jurassic Park now.
Exactly. Yeah. One boy, one girl. They're getting some.
And they have a picnic. Go, please go ahead. I
love that scene.
It's
okay. But so he's got to pay $100 a gallon for gas because, you know, times are so tough and they've got a ration.
Well, there's the birdpocalypse going on.
They buy an entire, like, case of water. Like, they walk out of there and they're playing, like, you know, market value for water. Like, gas is $100 a gallon. Don't you think water, our most precious resource, you know, would be going for $1,000 for one of those 12-liter bottles?
Oh, easily.
No, they just walk out $5.99.
Place turns into the world turns into the Wild Wild West like within the course of 3 hours.
It really does.
It's almost like I hold to the theory that it was Natalie having sex with Rod that triggered this event. that Rod is, again, he is some kind of unnatural force, and like her sleeping with the devil was the seventh seal.
They've affected
and
the future.
And that's what affected the birds.
I understand.
And so the birds, yeah, they have their sex scene where she's got dirty feet.
Yes! Oh my God! Thank you!
Yeah.
Her feet I'm are, so glad.
Her feet are crazy dirty.
Like, you gotta Photoshop that stuff out. Or we need a continuity
Crop
director.
It.
Please, yeah.
Crop
Don't
it.
Or just cut the shot before the long pan down to her legs.
I appreciate she getting to like, see all that, but yeah.
She looked like she was walking on charcoal before they started shooting. It's ridiculous. Like, black tar her feet. It's ridiculous.
And so then, like, the... There, as a director, there are shots like you try to do your best to protect your actors.
Yes.
And you don't want to make them look like any, you don't paint them in an unflattering light.
Like what I did with you this past Saturday when
right?
I directed there's you for the commercial.
Oh, God.
Just trying to protect you.
But like there's the point where he makes her help Rod push the mattress up against the door.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And it's the most unflattering, like he's filming her from behind creepily the whole time.
Yeah.
These thong panties.
Yep. I'm pretty sure... There's a little bit of a crotch shot going on in there, too.
Like yeah.
Somebody, who's the guy who has the website where they freeze frame and look for the...
Oh, Mr. Skin?
Mr. Skin. I'm pretty sure Mr. Skin is all over this movie, and there's, like, close-ups.
It's got, like, close-ups of her kidneys from the inside.
They've got that CSI machine. Enhance.
Oh, my God.
Just zooming in on her crotch.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, so after they have sex, that's when the birds finally attack. What is the time code at that point?
I didn't make that connection. It is.
You didn't make that connection?
Between them having sex
after
and the
they went
finally
to the pumpkin festival? Well,
I know. What time? I guess
like,
it's...
There's the most boring, and this is where I can't agree with you at all, because it's like nothing happens in this movie for almost an hour.
I stand
nothing
by it.
Happens.
I sat there by myself and watched it and laughed my ass off. Now, maybe that's just me. Maybe I am a masochist,
mm-hmm.
a cinemasochist. But I think it's enjoyable, and I can only imagine, like, you get a you know, group of your friends around, and you pop this thing in. It's fun for the whole family, kids.
All right. So the birds attack. Take
yes.
us through that.
That's about 38 minutes in, it looks like.
I think it's more than that, honestly.
Again,
I think,
it's called... Oh, no, you're right. Yeah,
I think it's like 48 minutes.
The bar scene happens at 42. Yes, 47 minutes. And it is the most jarring transition ever. Like, there's no lead-in. You know, you're hearing some, like, nice music. That's another thing about this movie. The music is all over the map. Like, you've got, like, some 80s pop music going on. And then you got to pull up that scene, the dance
scene.
Oh,
the hanging out with my family?
Yes. Oh, my God. There's some original music in this. You can hear the soundtrack on iTunes.
Yeah, you can download this song.
Please don't. I mean, pirate the fuck out of that music, because do not pay for it.
All right, let me see. Let me see if I can pull this thing up here. It's
there's an original song in here. There's a can you call it a dance number when there's only two people in an empty dance hall? Well,
can you call it a dance number if only one of those two people is actually dancing?
Yeah. At one point, they both do the Mr. Roboto. I'm going to go ahead and call that as dancing. That's my move.
I think he's like doing the Mr. Roboto, and she's kind of making fun of him a little bit. I don't know. I can't tell.
At least somebody is on film. Jesus.
But we've got a taste of it right here for you.
Here we go. It's semi-racist, too, like how...
Well, yeah, it's all about, like, it's almost like a Tyler Perry movie in a
it
song.
Is. Hanging with family. Just hanging out. Just
hanging out. Hanging out with family. Having ourselves a party. Just hanging out. Hanging out.
He must have written these lyrics, like, in the shower the morning of the shoot.
I didn't give him way too much credit.
I think he was vamping there on
this
set.
Song was
here we go.
Written.
In the kitchen, and everybody's wishing that she's fixing the favorite dish.
All right, we gotta stop that.
It's great. It's great.
That scene goes on for no less than 5 hours.
You know what I love about that scene, though? You know, they're shooting close-ups of the guy who I presume wrote the song and sings it on the single that you can, again, download on iTunes.
Uh-huh.
The lyrics that he's singing are not matching what he's saying.
They are not
set.
Matching what his mouth is doing.
There
no.
must have been... he didn't even have the lyrics to his own goddamn song down. He's vamping while they're shooting.
Which is killing me is... So they couldn't ADR anybody else in this movie, but
Ooh.
They were able to take the time to ADR this guy who sings his song.
You want to talk about some ADR?
Yes,
that's one
please.
Of the notes I made.
Okay.
So I mentioned the two kids. At one point, Okay, so there are two actually really stirring dramatic roles in this movie. We talked about, you know, the mother, Whitney's mother.
Uh-huh.
I say dramatic, but, you know, she gives one of the most believable. Like, you know, this person seems like, all right, I might see you on a sitcom. Maybe.
Yeah.
Or at least on stage. And then there's this little girl who's like...
the one who was hiding under a truck.
She's got to be a Fanning or something. Like, she's a prodigy. Dakota or Montana or one of the states. I don't know which Fanning it is. But she's cowering underneath this truck. You know, the birds have been attacking. I think she even says, they killed my mother. She's got tears streaming. Like, I know that the same guy who directed Rod did not direct this performance out of this girl. She came here with her own shit.
Are you saying that there was a ghost director for this movie? Kind of like how I believe Spielberg directed the last 10 minutes of Revenge of the Sith?
Yeah, no, I think there's documentation to back that up.
Wow.
So
really, you thought that her performance, that little girl's performance, so you didn't...
Go back and watch it. She's like crying.
The little boy's performance as much?
You know, not as stirring, not as moving. Wasn't feeling the gravitas from him.
All right.
But we follow that up immediately with the worst ADR ever. And this is, you can't have kids loop their own audio, unless, again, they're a Fanning. She must have been feeling it for that one scene, but later on when we cut to an interior as they're driving away, there's... Like, all she has to say is, like, thank you.
Uh-huh.
But you can tell it was clearly recorded, like, a month later. She totally forgot what scene she was in. It is not matched at all. It is awful. The best part of the movie, for my money.
Really? It's better than the...
Well, okay, maybe not.
When they finally... And we're jumping all over the place right now. That's the only way you really can attack this movie. Is when they decide to leave the hotel with the other, like, for some reason, like, they meet up with this other couple.
Apparently,
it's not
that's
his
where all,
buddy.
That's where all the kids are having sex. It's you just got a hotel room.
Just in a hotel room. It's not his buddy and his girlfriend. It's two other people, two other people. And they leave the hotel with coat hangers.
Yes.
And... I don't know.
This might be the best scene.
I don't know how these people were directed.
Yeah.
But basically, they're just directed, just keep swinging.
Wave this coat hanger.
I feel like James Nguyen told them that, like, something completely different than what he ended up animating on the screen.
Yeah.
Because he's got them, like, standing in a circle, just kind of waving their arms around.
Meanwhile, the birds are a mile away in the sky. They're nowhere near them. They're not even being time bombed.
But it's, like, all the same animations. It's like you have... maybe three variations of animations for birds, and he's just kind of scattered those across the screen.
That same shot of the bird getting, like, shot in midair and then falling out of frame, it's got to
like
be used.
It's like a World War II plane crash.
It does, yeah. Yeah, for all you kids out there didn't know, yes, they sound like kamikaze pilots circa 1942 when eagles fall out of the sky. That's just good science.
And when birds poop, apparently it's flesh-eating
it's explosive.
Acid.
I do love that.
Somehow they get a hold of, like, automatic weapons.
This is the next thing. So you say the coat hangers are funny, but I would argue that's probably a better way to ward off birds because, you know, it's hand-to-hand combat at that point. Better, though, than I would say what they attempt to do, which is fire an AK-47 at eagles who are a quarter of a mile away from a moving vehicle.
Yes.
This happens constantly throughout the third act.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They end up trying to save a bunch of people who... At that point, these people are perfectly safe in a bus, and they end up saving them. They pull them out of this bus, and everyone dies.
Immediately.
Every single person they pull out of that bus gets killed by bird poop.
If I were on that bus, I would have been taking that person with me. I told you I was safer on the
right?
It's like a double-decker London bus.
It's like these people, not only... I feel like the birds... are the protagonists in this movie, and Rod and his group are like the villains for some reason.
This is the Beowulf. That's what needs to happen in Birdemic 3. It's got
to be the other
the
side
Grendel
of the story.
Where we see how, well, we know why they're upset, don't we?
Yeah.
It's because us humans have...
the deforestation.
That's right, yeah, mm-hmm. And then polar bears.
Oh, my God.
Somehow it all ties back to global warming.
The news footage... But the news footage, like the woman, the
she's
newscaster,
awful.
She was like sitting so low.
I love how the framing, yes, she's got like the headroom, like you could fit another person above her in the headroom. She looks like a midget next to that TV screen. Yeah, so that's laughable. The entire thing is laughable.
How about the when the guy tries to rob them on the road for the gas?
The cowboy?
The cowboy tries to rob them for the gas and he gets his throat slit
immediately
by a bird.
Yeah.
They drive off and leave the
leave
gas.
Leave the gas can there.
Like, he this just is a paid huge... $100 a gallon.
I know.
And
well,
they
to
just
be
left
fair, it.
It
could have been filled with water, which we all know is much cheaper at that point.
It was
maybe
the
it was only $5.99.
They really do like it. It lost what little to no direction it had in the first three quarters.
Yeah.
The final quarter of the movie. Like, suddenly they start just making weird random decisions. I know I mentioned this a couple minutes ago. They take a picnic. They just go on a picnic. They're like, the big deal is that there are birds attacking people outside.
They've killed the entire town.
And they go outside to have a picnic.
And like, they have a lovely lunch, a nice dissolve.
And then they meet a wacky old professor.
This is, he's the first guy who appears and tells us how
did
horrible
he come
human
first,
race is.
Or was the wood guy, like the ranger guy, who's
you mean
you
Woody
guys better get going, there's a bear coming or something.
You mean Woody Harrelson from The Hunger Games?
Yes.
This guy, if you pull it up, let's see, I've got the time code here. Yeah, I'm an hour and 15 minutes. If you happen to make it this far in this movie, it's going to be worth it because Woody Harrelson from The Hunger Games shows up and starts talking about the woodland creatures. And it's okay. We're safe here because we're in nature. If you notice, the eagles are only attacking like gas stations and you know places where humans are. Oh, but by the way, there's a forest fire burning the forest around behind us. So and look out for that wolf.
God, I tried. Oh yeah, that's right. He talks
distance.
About the wolves. Oh my God. Okay, let me cut you off for just one
Please.
Second because I got a. Oh no, never mind.
Uh-oh.
Never
it
mind.
Playing?
It's not what I thought it was going to be.
Oh
it's,
no.
It's a mashup. Somebody did a mashup of Birdemic, the sale scene with something else. I was going to play the sale scene.
That's probably the best part that's come out of this movie are all of the YouTube clips where people have just taken it and run with it.
Oh my God, there really is. There's a lot of good stuff. But yeah, no, the guy talks about like there's the wolf coming. I better go and take care of him. You guys better get going. And so then I guess did that happen before or after? They come across the weird professor with the face mask on.
With the SARS mask?
Yeah.
I think that happened afterwards, after we encounter, his name is Dr. Jones. No shit.
Oh, God.
Dr. Jones.
Oh,
so,
God.
You know.
So what was the whole point of that scene with Dr. Jones? What was that deal? I can't remember. Because it seemed like to me he was just kind of rehashing what the guy before him just said.
I have no idea. Exactly. Yeah, and that's what it's just parable after parable. And they really beat you over the head with the environmental angle in this movie. I do like, however, when they first encounter him, he's got his mask on and he's looking over a flock of dead birds.
Uh-huh.
They're walking up to him from the distance and he says, "Don't come any closer. These birds are contaminated." Cut to a scene of them just stone-faced continuing to walk towards him. Like, these motherfuckers deserve to die. I hope their flesh gets eaten by bird poop.
Nobody heeds anybody's warnings in this film. All right. What I did find is this little clip when Natalie Whitney Moore gets she's revealed in her bikini
in her
bra and panties.
I want to see this.
And Rod's big okay, so there she is.
Rod.
In her bra and panties and his reaction. Okay, I just want to stop this for a second. He's watching TV. Like, he's apparently watching TV with some old woman.
It's an infomercial going on.
He's watching
background.
An infomercial. So, all right. So we'll start that over again. She comes out. She's looking great.
Rod, what do you think?
What do you think? And he looks at her.
Here we go.
And it's the slowest. They show him look down.
Yep.
Then the camera looks down and does
Creepy.
The whole body span.
Creepy.
You look fine.
You look fine. What a wordsmith.
That's so creepy.
It's so creepy.
Even not just how he reacts to it, but the way it's shot is absolutely creepy.
This is what I'm telling you. This is that repressed sexuality that's so prevalent in the Asian culture.
So please tell me, what is it that you're hoping to get out of a second one?
I want this to be the Evil Dead 2 of this movie. It looks like if you go, you can see the trailer.
That Natalie and Rod get sent back in medieval times by
no,
the end of
No, that's 3.
It?
That's 3. I'm talking about, right? Evil Dead 2.
Well,
it's
the very end
a,
of Evil Dead 2, he gets sent back in time.
That's right, that's right. But in the sense that Evil Dead 2 was basically a remake of Evil Dead 1, just with a bigger budget and a little more production value.
A little more funny.
More self-aware of itself.
From what I've seen in the trailer for the second Birdemic, it does look like it's way self-aware. That they've brought back the guy who sings Hanging Out With My Family, and he's
Everybody's
got a whole other
back.
Song.
Woody Harrelson's back.
Everyone's
Dr.
back,
Jones
but they've got a whole
back.
Other couple back, too. Like, there's a new couple
yep.
that kind of join Rod and Natalie on their adventure.
Exactly. Also an actress, right? Isn't that the angle? She's getting some sort of role?
Yeah, I guess she's also an actress.
Well, you're saying that they're in on the joke the second one around. I'm not quite sure. I know that whoever cut that trailer...
Whoever's making this movie, they have to be
It's the same guy. It's him again.
But they have to... At this point now, they have to kind of be like, oh, everyone thinks it was a joke. Okay, yeah, it was. We're making another one. It's funny.
You say that.
I think that's the way. No one's that dumb, man.
The people that made this movie were that dumb. Nobody stopped them.
Made this first one were dumb.
It's the same people.
It's a horrible movie, dude. There's no way. Actors know when they do crap, when they make a bad movie. When I was a kid, I did this movie called Roach Man, and it's horrible.
Oh, you're in Roach Man. Yes. Yeah, Brian Harden. I know him.
I love Brian. And Brian had a really cool, ambitious project. Yeah. And for a low-budget movie, it was fun.
It's not bad, actually. There's some great effects in there for the early 90s.
But it was still, like, I can go back and look at it and go, ooh. There are some problems. There are some problems with that.
It was rough.
But from what we had to work with, we did all right. You know, we did okay with it. But people know when they do something like Birdemic, wow, that's crap. That movie is horrible. The only reason they're going to come back is because, like, it's almost like The Room.
Yes.
People think that movie is crap, and that Tommy Wiseau guy, there's no way in the world he can go to all these screenings and go, everybody loves my movie. No one loves it. They love to make fun of it, but the movie's horrible and not even worthy of this podcast. There's no way I could even make I can't even talk about that flick. But this one at least had that astonishing factor where it's like it's called Birdemic, and the birds don't even attack.
No,
until like
minute 48.
It's so long into the movie.
Yeah. You would almost think you were watching the wrong movie.
I feel like with this second one, what they're going to do is they're going to try too hard.
Yes.
To play up the stuff that they did in the first one that people react to.
It already looks like
and
that.
And it's not going to work.
No.
I know I want to watch it.
Oh, yeah.
In a way, I want to see it. Not in the same sense that you want to see it, because I feel like you're a little more excited about it.
I am kind of excited about it, because now it's like revisiting old friends that you hated when you were in high school, but, you know, the glow of memory.
What did this movie get right? I mean, that's something that I do want to focus on with this podcast. When we talk about these movies, that there's got to be at least something that these movies did right.
God, if so, I don't know what it is, Joe. I mean, there's no production value.
Mm-mm.
Nobody in here can act. The editing is awful. The sound is awful. The effects are awful. It doesn't put this town on the map in a way that's positive.
No.
I would immediately move if I lived in Moon Bay Pie or whatever the fuck's the name of
There's one actor in this movie. And it's
that little girl?
When Rod is doing his presentation for his solar panel company.
Yeah.
And the guy's like, do you have a patent?
Oh, that's right.
And he's like, yeah, we did blah, 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 we own the patent. Who are your competitors? And he's like, guys, this is some revolutionary green tech. He's got this, but he's so...
Yeah, he sells it.
He's so sincere, and he's so good, and his performance is really, for that 2 seconds, is a very honest little performance.
Yep.
He's really good.
He will not be in the sequel.
But no, he won't. I did a favor for somebody.
Yeah.
I think, if anything, what this movie got right is putting Whitney Moore in bra and panties.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I can't think of anything else.
It launched your career for Birdemic 2.
They would have been better off using bad practical bird effects.
Than doing
the CG stuff.
Yeah.
It upsets me as someone who wants to make film to see people make something like this.
I know. Which is what I'm saying. How many hours do you think it took? This must have taken a couple of weeks to shoot, right? At least.
You know,
maybe a month.
I'm going to give you some insight on Roach Man. And not that this was Roach Man, but if maybe it's comparable.
Yeah.
It took us 2 years to film Roach Man.
I remember. I remember seeing the first half of the movie. He hadn't even finished the second half. He had a rough cut with like comp in effects.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Well, I do know at one point like he was using a different guy as my character.
We need to do Roach Man on an episode here.
That would be so fun.
Let's do Roach Man.
But the thing is, nobody else would be able to see it.
No one's going
to
see this.
But
no one should see Birdemic. No, I take it back. You should see Birdemic.
But we could get Brian on with us.
That'd be great.
Yeah, no.
I think he knows what it is.
We're planning, instead of talking about Birdemic, we're planning future episodes. We'll get back to that.
We'll do this off the air.
But
I don't think it does anything right.
It took us 2 years to make Roach Man. But granted, there were setbacks. Like I was saying, the guy who was playing the second lead that I ended up playing, he ended up leaving. And so Brian had to recast the movie.
And reshoot. Oh, I didn't know that.
Almost the whole thing. So we had to go with it. The movie, we started filming it when I was 18. We stopped filming it the day, no, 19. We stopped filming it when I was 21.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was, I had my first beer working on that movie. In fact, that's the beer I drink and do my spit take with.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, what a waste of your first beer.
So I don't think this movie took 2 years to make.
No.
But I wouldn't be surprised if it took a year.
You think so?
Yeah.
There's a lot of locations.
There's a lot of locations, but he recycles a lot of places.
So much so that, did you notice, the place where they get almost robbed by the cowboy is the same point of the road where they pull off, where they later run out of gas. No. It's like literally like 5 minutes later when they're running out of gas.
Oh,
it's that
God.
Same. It's like, I think it just drove in a circle and ran out of gas in the exact same location.
Do you know if the second one's going to take place in the same location? Is it going to be in the same city?
You know, I don't know that the trailers spoil that.
I think
it
has to. I mean, you got the same band from the same pub.
Yeah, how do you relocate all those actors?
And, okay, I know I'm going back to something we've already covered, and we should probably be wrapping this up soon.
Yeah, let's do that.
But they go to an Irish pub. And that's where this guy's singing, hanging out with the family.
Because that's where all black soul singers work on their new tunes and try them out for an audience of nobody.
I just, two teenagers. I find that really, really interesting.
It's really,
really
bad.
So there is something that we like to do after we've talked about a movie. We like to explore the IMDb message boards and offer you a different point of view on what people are thinking and saying about these movies. And this is a dramatic interpretation of what those people are saying about Birdemic. Okay. Here we go. The director made a terribly awful movie, but he did it masterfully. You can't fake something like this. He must be a real student of film and watched a billion movies before being able to get the timing down for this. He held on just long enough to get the laugh. Pure genius filmmaking. I had to turn down the volume. Filmmaking. I hope I'm making myself as clear as I'd like. I'm not being sarcastic. You have to know what you're doing to it this badly. What? You have to know what you're doing to it this badly. I am not a werewolf.
Well, while I do agree it's masterfully bad, I think it's ridiculous to give it a 10. It's a terrible film. Luckily, some laughs can come from it, but it doesn't deserve anything over a 3. Oh, it's that awful. Plus, the fact that the director was actually serious and not attempting to make anything humorous makes this film even sadder.
Are you going to add that last?
Looking for a good film? http://mal-education? malaeducation.blogspot.com.
That's what makes a good bad movie.
For me, the laughs pretty much stopped at around the 2:30 mark.
This message has been...
Oh, fuck. This message has been deleted by an administrator.
For me, the laughs pretty much stopped at the 2:30 mark, around about when my ears became entirely fatigued by the relentless onslaught of ear-piercing weapons, fire, and constantly looping bird squawking.
I do have imaginary friends, and I don't consider myself stupid.
It turns out it's actually social commentary on same-sex marriage.
I knew it.
I heard it from a screening from the director.
I gave it a 10 as well.
I'll give it a 10 for the sheer amount of enjoyment I got out of it. Seriously, me, my friends, and everyone else in the cinema were laughing uncontrollably. Holy zombie Jesus!
But it's not a comedy. It shouldn't have made you laugh uncontrollably. It's obviously failed as a horror film. Thus, it doesn't deserve a 10 or even a 5. When you rate and review movies, film, cinema, it helps to actually know what you're talking about and what the director was going for. I highly doubt he was going for laughs, or he wouldn't have sold it as a horror film. Apparently, the director failed on several levels. Actor choice, dialogue, and graphics. Thus, this movie does not deserve a high rating.
This message has been deleted by an administrator.
It shouldn't matter what the director went out to make. It is what it is. It's on its own entity. It's its own entity now. Regardless of intent, it's hilarious. Who cares if the director was trying to make a thriller romance horror? It turned out to be a pretty decent comedy to me and a whole lot of other people making it a successfully entertaining film. We all live in our own worlds and see things our own way. Everyone isn't going to feel the same level of emotions for every single movie. Why does the success of a film have to be dictated by its intent?
Oh my God, I need to underscore this.
Holy shit.
This is a long one. I will give it a 10 after writing this post, and it deserves it. It being the movie, and there will never be any other it in my life. I came to see this movie after I found the legendary coat hanger scene on YouTube.
Yes.
When the movie started and started at, a very slow pace, I endured it because I knew what was going to happen and was looking forward to that. So the minutes passed, and I got impatient, and more minutes passed, and I got angry. More minutes passed, and I got desperate. And then, at some point, I lost all hope. Not only my hopes regarding that movie, but my hopes regarding any movie that was or will be made. Lost any hope that life, my life, will ever be good again. And in this state of bleak acceptance came the attack, and I got scared. No other movie, no other creature has ever made me want to scratch my eyes out of my skull, tear off my ears, and trample on them, both eyes and ears.
Ooh.
It was the pure horror. And when it ended, I was so full of joy, I fell to my knees and prayed the Lord, since I had seen the other side and came back to start a new life. That was praise the Lord, not prayed. This movie will trigger every human emotion possible. You will gain new insights on what is possible in life, in cinema. It is a masterpiece, an enigma that waits to be solved. But I guess the solution will be on a spiritual, individual level, differing for each viewer. I think I'm on the right track with my religious interpretation, though. It seems to have been some kind of purgatory in which the protagonists were thrown, similar to some theories regarding the series Lost before the final episodes.
Ooh.
They have been in their own personal hell in a twilight dimension, overlapping our own reality. Hence, for example, look at the scene at the side of the highway when they find the dead people and rescue the kids. The birds attack. But look close at the other vehicles on the highway. They pass and drive along as if nothing happens. This makes pretty clear that everything is just happening in the minds of the protagonists. Kind of a dreamlike state. Think Inception. I can't believe we ran out of music. Or you might as well read a social commentary into it. That the other drivers are blind to what happens on the other side of the road. The ignoring of all the bad things in the world that happen around them, yet they continue their lives as if nothing happened. One way or the other, there is no doubt that this movie is a milestone in cinematic history. Should be mandatory to be shown in schools or universities, since school children probably are not mentally equipped for the powerful truth shown in Birdemic Shock and Terror.
You know, that's interesting. Or it could just be that they didn't have the budget to, like, shut down an entire major highway while they shoot this horrible movie.
That, too. All right, there's no way we're reading the rest of this thing. There's, like, three pages of this.
We're two pages in.
But this is a fun experiment. I really had a good time talking about this movie with
absolutely.
You, man.
Absolutely.
I do thank you, the listeners, for listening to us just go through this thing as sloppy as it was.
Yeah.
We're just kind of getting our feet wet, getting used to doing this thing together.
Right. We'll be totally polished by the time we do Birdemic 2.
Birdemic 2, yeah.
Electric Boogaloo.
I know for the next one, I kind of want to tackle a movie that some people might disagree with me on.
Oh, controversial.
A little film that some people might call The Avengers.
What?
Yeah, right? You're going to have to stay tuned next week. Well, maybe the week after that. I'm going to be going on vacation. But seriously, want to thank you for listening to the podcast. If you have any thoughts, any ideas for movies that you'd like us to go through, just go ahead and message us on the Next Wave Radio page on Facebook. Just type in Next Wave Radio. I'm sure we'll come up with some kind of Twitter account for this.
Yeah.
We're just trying to kind of fly in by the seat of our pants right now with
this
thing. Again, we have been the untitled Next Wave Radio Bad Movie Podcast. We'll get a title for this thing soon. If you have any good ideas for titles, send those along as well.
Yeah. Where should they send those to?
They just send those to whoever, man.
Just out into the ether.
You see a representative for Next Wave. You know, you can write me. My name is Joe. It's God, I don't even have an email address for this thing.
Well, just
look
it
me up
in
on
a ball
Facebook.
And
yeah.
Put it
in a bottle. Just put it in a bottle, throw it in the water, it'll make its way to me. God, that is
Chinese
so stupid.
Lantern.
Let
maybe?
Us please just wrap this thing up. My name is Joe.
I'm Joel.
And I want to thank you for checking this thing out. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks, guys.
You've been listening to the Next Wave Radio Network.
That's fucking gold.